I'd give for that wonderful phrase, to hear those three little words. That's all I'd live for.
Patricia T. O'Connor joins me now. She's the author of a number of books on the language, Woe Is I, Words Fail Me, You Send Me, written in collaboration with her husband, and then Woe Is I Junior, aimed at kids, and a new book is coming out on May 5th called Origins of the Specious.
Yes, it's all about myths.
You love puns in your titles, don't you?
I do. I can't help it. And I couldn't get three words there, so sorry, it had to be a little long.
It's okay. You know, these kinds of patterns are meant to be broken. Three words. But
right.
I don't know if we're going to find a song to introduce you with four little words.
How about
words.
Five little words? four little words, right.
And you, well, we take calls when you come here. Our number here is 212-433-9692. People also leave comments on our show page at WMYC.org. But today you bring up something that has concerned me. I'm not going to say that it's kept me awake at night, but I've kind of given in on this one. The difference between the word sex and gender. I always thought gender was a grammatical thing, and sex was the word that we used to describe the difference between men and women.
Correct.
But sex, I guess, has come to mean the sexual act, and so people don't want to say...
Well, I don't want to say that we should give up on it entirely. I still think of, you know, it's all right to talk about a baby's sex. We know that it means male or female. I don't think we've entirely given it up to gender. But what made me think of all this was an article, you may have seen it in the Times last week, an interview with Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And one interesting thing that she said was that in her career, she had a role in shaping the language of the law. And she said that she helped introduce the term gender discrimination as a synonym for sex discrimination.
And why would that even be necessary?
Well, the reason this came about is that in the early 70s, when she was a law professor at Columbia and a general counsel for the ACLU, she was involved in a lot of sex discrimination cases. And at one point, her secretary was typing up a brief to be submitted to male judges and came across the phrase sex discrimination and suggested to Ruth Bader Ginsburg at that time that she said, you know, sex discrimination isn't what you ought to be saying. She said the first association of those men, meaning the judges, with the word sex is not what you're talking about. Why don't you use a grammar book term? Why not use gender? It has a neutral sound, and it will ward off distracting associations. And so she used the word gender discrimination. And actually, I looked up an old paper of hers that was published in the Journal of it's called the Supreme Court Review in 1975. And she talks about gender discrimination in it. And she has a footnote at the bottom that says, "For impressionable minds, the word sex may conjure up improper images of issues like those that the Supreme Court has left to, quote, contemporary community standards," unquote. And what she means by that is pornography cases. And she goes on to say that the denotation and connotations of the word gender make it more appropriate than sex for use in the context of this set of problems, meaning wage discrimination and so on.
But I wonder what some of the other people on the Supreme Court, those strict grammatical constructionists, think.
Well,
does Antonin Scalia use gender these days?
I think it's pretty well used across the board in legal arguments. I did a little shopping around in journals published in the 60s and 70s, and I found the phrase gender discrimination first used in March of 1970, and it was in an article about wage differences between male and female music librarians. Now, interestingly, the phrase sex discrimination is really old. Guess when it first showed up in the news columns? Take a wild guess.
Sex discriminations. I would say 1812.
Well, not bad. It's 1885.
Well, I'm off by 60-something
years. Right, in the sense that we're talking about. discrimination based on sex. That was 1885, so it's been around for a long time. But you're correct in what you said earlier. Both sex and gender are classically derived words, and sex has always meant either of the two main categories, male and female, dividing living things, whereas gender, meaning kind, from the Latin genus, the Greek genos, was first used to mean, principally as a grammatical term, referring to categories of nouns.
So is this one of those situations, and there are quite a few in as the language changes, where one might avoid using the new term if it felt uncomfortable, but at the same time not make a big thing about it when other people do?
Sure. I'm not that bothered when other people use gender, but I certainly don't avoid using sex. I don't think it means merely the sex act or sexual activity. But this is an individual call.
Mm-hmm.
I think gender sounds a little bit, a little bit prudish, as though it's avoiding the term sex.
And we don't see it on questionnaires. They still say last name,
right.
First name, middle initial, sex.
Exactly, right. Of course, it's short. Maybe that's why.
Right, gender would take up more space.
Oh,
here's another
interesting point. Guess when the phrase sex symbol came about, meaning, you know, the way we mean it, someone has a sex symbol. Oh, you're so close, 1871.
Well, you gave me that other date. I figured they were talking a lot about that stuff. And we've never said a gender symbol.
No.
Oh.
No. Now, if you said someone was a gender symbol, I mean, yuck, what would that mean?
I don't know what. Sometimes I hear gender, it sounds
you
so
you look like
clunky.
One of those little symbols with an arrow coming out of it or a little cross coming out of it. Maybe that's what that would mean.
Patricia T. O'Connor is my guest. We take a lot of calls when she is here. Our number here is 212-433-9692. Anything else before we go to the calls?
Well, I did have one other thing I thought I might share with listeners. A listener in, where was she from? Croton-on-Hudson. Sent a question in on behalf of her 11-year-old son, who wondered why all the rooms in the house were called some kind of room, bedroom, living room, dining room, etc., except for the kitchen. And why isn't a kitchen called a cooking room? And I think that it's because the word kitchen is so old. It goes back to the year 1000. And it's much older than any of these other rooms. It's contemporary with the word room. But the rooms in the house came along fairly late. And I guess it's really no surprise. Like bedroom, 1590. Guest room, 1638. Dining room, 1601. Playroom, 1725. Bathroom, 1780. Living room, 1825. Mudroom, 1950. Laundry room, 1967. So kitchen got there before any of the others, and it stuck. So we don't have cooking rooms. We have kitchens.
A caller actually asks why the term fire is used about dismissing a person from a job. You fire clay.
Oh, that's interesting.
But you don't fire a person. The British one, you sack somebody.
Oh, exactly.
And
or
I don't know why
redundant.
Sack. Unless you put them in a sack and then set fire to it.
Yeah, I can't answer that, but that's a very good question.
Maybe somebody knows. One of the great things we don't have available to us while we're trying to talk and take care of other things, but a lot of people do have the internet available to themselves. And as we discover after a show, a lot of people consult with the internet and they send us that information, usually – to also make us feel like we're fools.
Right. You idiot. If you had only looked on Wikipedia.
Exactly. You would know the answer.
Well, we're here on the radio. We aren't on Wikipedia. But I'll tell you what. I'll answer that one on my blog.
And meanwhile, I'm sure somebody will call in. If they don't, you will answer it on your
but
blog.
But firing,
and we'll talk
that's
about
interesting. Why does fire mean to dismiss someone? Mm-hmm. That's interesting. I'll check into that and stick it on the blog.
We are going to go to our first call. Peter from Brooklyn, hi, you're on the air.
Hi there. I'm calling because I wanted to know why Cardinal Egan's title is between his first name and his last name.
Oh, I know that the New York Times style on cardinals' names has changed over the years. It used to be Richard Cardinal Cushing, and now it's Cardinal Richard Cushing. So I don't know. I guess that's just a style that's evolved.
To have his,
is that what you're talking about?
Well, they call him, you know, Edward Cardinal Egan, and I'm wondering why is his title between his first name and his last name, and not just at the beginning, like Mr. President or, you know, Your Honor or something. It's always put in front of a person's name, and this is between his first name and his last name.
So yeah, I can't answer that. I know that it's just always been the traditional way of referring to a cardinal, but I don't think it's any longer the Times' style. I may be mistaken on that. But
this was specific to the New York City area, and the New York Times put this title in the middle of the man's name opposed to the in front of it?
No, I think that was generally the way a cardinal was referred to.
Okay.
In Italy and everywhere else.
Uh-huh.
Really?
I don't know why.
Didn't you grow up as a Catholic?
Well,
I thought
sort of.
Our next caller is Tolanda from Brooklyn. Hi, Tolanda. You're on the air.
Hi. I was just calling about the difference between the word sex and gender. I work in the diversity field, and when we talk about it, we talk about sex being biological and gender being like a social construction, meaning people's expression of their feeling of maleness or femaleness,
mm-hmm.
which can be culturally specific to different places. Like some places, men wear, what we would consider feminine dress
mm-hmm.
in our culture. But it's very different from, you know, your sex, which is biological.
Well, I know to a certain extent, the fact that sex traditionally has meant either male or female, and
right.
now our sexual categories are a lot more complicated than that with
right.
Gender preferences and whatnot. That does make sex a little less adequate to cover all the bases.
Although the words keep on changing. For example, negatives become positives. There was an obituary today in the New York Times of a woman who was one of the pioneers of queer studies.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Now, there was a time when queer was considered quite negative. We also hear people often referring to their own group in the most derogatory way, even though
mm-hmm.
they don't want to hear anybody else use the same phrase. But when they're joking amongst themselves, they often will use that really the ugliest word.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know whether sex is going to come back simply because it was seen as something we didn't want to say for a while. Is this kind of like putting little pants on piano legs at one point during the Victorian era.
Cute ruffles.
Well, one of the things that I wanted to bring up about that is that, to me, the word gender has more flexibility because sex, it's like, okay, either you have these biological aspects or you don't, kind of, whereas gender, you can express your gender expression can be male or female, regardless of your biology.
I see what you mean. Yeah. And you may be right.
So one is biological, one's a state of mind.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And a state of culture, how people see that, right?
Sure. I still think, however, that if you're just talking about, what was her baby, a boy or a girl?
I think it's
all right to be talking about its sex.
Yeah, but we do hear a lot of people saying,
what was
her gender? And we do hear that. Or what
yeah.
was the gender of that person?
That's true.
And at this point, the word gender has often become interchangeable with the word sex in its usage. I think the distinction that you're making, and a number of other callers have also
mm-hmm.
called in to make, is a very
it's
reasonable
just right.
one.
Exactly. That gender has more to do with your outlook on life, your approach to your sexuality, et cetera, et cetera.
And your role in society.
And your role in society, exactly.
Thank you so much for calling us, Tolanda.
Absolutely.
And we will take a little break and be back with more of your calls and also your comments on our show page at WNYC.org as we continue this conversation with Patricia T. O'Connor on a regular feature of the Leonard Lopate Show.
Oh, baby, what I'd give to hear those three little words. Man, that's such a wonderful phrase. To hear those three little words, that's all I'd live for.
We're back with Patricia T. O'Connor, who can also be reached when she's not here at her email site, mailbox@grammarphobia.com. And there's also a blog there at grammarphobia.com?
Yes.
And you have a kind of relationship with our audience there, don't you?
I do. Most of the questions on the blog are from WNYC listeners who've emailed me after the show or in succeeding weeks, and I try to answer their questions on the blog.
And if they don't write to you, they write to me, and I forward it to you, but I would prefer they write directly to you.
Right. It'll get to me.
We go now to Gary. Hi, Gary. You're on the air. Gary from Brighton Beach.
Brooklyn. Okay. Now, should we get away from feminine endings completely? And I say, of course not. Actress and waitress are so ingrained in the language, they're an intrinsic part of it, and it would be like calling a woman a he. You cannot get away from those, and yet the New York Times is trying as much as possible. They do not use executrix, whereas lawyers will still use executrix.
Well, how far do you want to go with this, Gary? Gary, can I talk for a moment? Gary, this is a conversation, Gary.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you a question, because we got your point. How far do you want to go with this? In the 19th century, you used to read about a negress and a Jewess and
poetess. Authoress.
Yeah. Do you want to do all of those too?
Of course, we cannot go back where those words are so obsolete.
Well, but actress is already becoming semi-obsolete because many people just call everybody an actor.
I think that would be wrong. The Academy still calls it the Best Actress Award, and to call Katharine Hepburn or even Jane Fonda an actor desecrates the English language.
But, Gary, I think what you're proposing is that the generic word for an occupation be male by default, and that if it happens to be a woman holding that position, we should add a suffix ess on the end.
If it's in the past, we should not change it. For instance, I talk about somebody who tried to shoot a lawyer for the BRT who offered a very small settlement in a Malbone Street wreck as a heroine, and I have to refer to her as a heroine because she did this deed at the beginning of the 20th century. Had she done something like this today, I would probably go along with hero. But, I mean, you cannot revise the past. If she was a heroine then, if she was an aviatrix then, I mean, you go along with that. And this term, what about executrix? That's the most complicated.
Oh, I think only in legal terminology do you find the word executrix. For instance, in a will, you never find the word executrix used in real English.
I've never said it out loud. In fact, I'm afraid to.
And you don't use aviatrix. You use dominatrix, though.
Well, that's because there is no male equivalent. There's another kind of word, I guess, for that, which I also won't
use.
Well,
the whole point of dominatrix is that it's a female, you know? So that's sort of essential to the gestalt.
Well, anyway, thank you so much for calling us. And I'm sure there are many people who have strong feelings about that. In fact,
yeah.
I think that what our conversations about language have revealed to me is that people feel very strongly about the language, and they mm-hmm. probably are more likely to be outraged by something that is different from what they grew up with mm-hmm. than practically anything else. I mean, they're probably
certainly.
Less outraged by what happened at Abu Ghraib than they are about whether mm-hmm. Somebody was saying hopefully.
Exactly. Like no one in, we talked about aunt and vase last time, I think. And I suggested that aunt and vase are perfectly okay and got a lot of upset mail. But the truth is that there are many phonologists who believe that the original pronunciation of the in Britain of both of those words was with ant, was ant and vase, and that they
we know that
became
from rhymes.
Lengthened later. And I'm not making these things up. I have no reason to. But if I had grown up saying aunt, I would still say aunt, but I don't.
But you aren't.
I don't.
David,
I mustn't say that.
David from Montclair, New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, please. I'm wondering if you could help me with the two phrases, if you will, and as it were. I mean, if you will, when somebody says if you will, they usually mean if you will allow me or mm-hmm. if you will forgive me. Or what. But as it were, I mean, first of all, why isn't it as it was? And where did as it were come from?
I don't know where it came from, but both of those are basically conversational fillers. You don't see them in writing that much. It's for taking up space.
Yeah, I did think it was a bit wasteful at that, if you will. Thank you so much.
But we have a lot
it's
of
sort of like that said.
We have a lot of modifiers like that.
Oh, yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with throwing them in.
No.
Because sometimes we don't want to make the bald statement.
Right. You might want to have a little pause before clobbering someone with a statement. The only crime with those sorts of things is if you let them run away with you and you have one in every sentence.
Yeah.
Then you just start sounding like a windbag.
Or somebody in Congress.
Uh-huh.
Edward from Livingston, New Jersey. How you're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to make a comment about the use of the word cardinal between the two names. And I can't shed much light on it, but the only little bit I can is that it's parallel to the English usage using titles. So, for example, we have Bertram the Third, Earl Lord Russell,
mm-hmm.
And other such designations.
Right, so Henry Lord
there, I'm
Lester.
I'm not quite sure.
I think that you're probably right. Although, what do you think, Pat? Or is this something that comes from St. Louis? This whole cardinal
thing.
No,
it sounds good to me. But I that's one thing with this show. I know that if there are things I don't know about, sure enough, someone out there will have a good idea and call in about it.
John from Queens, how you're on the air?
Hey, how are you doing?
We're okay.
I've got
so far, John. You're not going to mess it up, are you?
Anyway, I've got an idea about where fire might come from when you refer to sacking someone.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a fan of antique artillery, and often in the old manuals, they do not talk about firing the piece. They talk about discharging it.
Oh, so it might be a roundabout way of saying discharge.
Exactly.
That's interesting.
It's shot in the dark there anyway.
Yeah, it's a good theory. Shot in the dark. Little pun there.
Thank you so much for calling. We have no idea whether that's true. There are any number of back formations in explaining words mm-hmm. in the English language that sometimes turn out to be true, but more often than not just sound logical.
Right.
And then there's probably a totally different reason. Somebody was talking about, I don't know, shooting a gun and... Well, whatever. Who knows?
Yeah.
We go now to Barbara from Manhattan. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Leonard. Hi. How do you do, ma'am? It's good to hear your voice again. I just wanted to say two things, and I don't want to, certainly don't want to disagree with my dear, dear, dear mentor, Justice Ginsburg, who I revere. However, although I can understand her reasons for changing sex to gender, as an employment discrimination attorney, I've retired myself. The use of the word sex discrimination was important to differentiate between the treatment of men and women, and also in employment and other areas. And also, sex discrimination also came to be represent a discrimination based on pregnancy, for example, which, of course, was limited to the female sex.
Mm-hmm.
So there's there was a reason for using sex discrimination. I continued to use it. But the other thing I wanted to say is that as far as neutral, gender-neutral words, there are some gender-neutral words that can be used, but others that can't be used. And I'm an executrix. There is no gender-neutral word to use for those terms or for actor-actress. And we're trying to avoid, we spent the whole decades of the 70s trying to change the use of male default, words. In the statutes and in everything, because they automatically assumed that the default should be male. However, we started calling things male and by male and female terms, and I would not want to give that up.
So you're saying that this is the equivalent of people who object to saying everyone get his coat when we're talking about men and women.
Well, if there's no one but men in the room, you can certainly say, well, why would you want to differentiate between men and women and say everyone? It's only when you're talking about a general term. Like if you're talking about acting, there are actors and there are actresses. And I know that most actresses now call themselves actor. It's a field that I know something about. And I really object to that very strongly.
But what about doctor?
Yes, that's
how's that different?
That's a gender neutral word, exactly.
But
exactly.
Actually,
there are no gender neutral word for actor. Do you know what I'm saying?
But actor and executor are gender neutral. If you look them up in the dictionary, it does not say a male stage performer or a male person who executes a will.
I suspect
just as a person who does.
I suspect that doctor is gender neutral only because there were no female doctors until fairly recently, and so there was no, the word doctress was not invented as the words actress and
right.
And all those other words were.
Well, I guess what you're talking about are the implications of the word. In other words, what you're saying the use is basically that the use of word actress was in a sense diminishing to the women who were in the field. Like authoress used to be used years ago.
Right, or poetess.
Right. But
sculptress.
That's a difficult area. I mean, I just don't know what to tell you. I never thought of doctor as being associated only with males, although it's true that most doctors were male. I think that nobody associates doctor, the word doctor anymore with male. Maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think people do,
but I think that if there were such a word as doctoress, and I'm glad there isn't,
yeah,
people would still insist on using it.
No.
I think there's no purpose to having a word like actress or executrix. Why
I don't know how actress
why
came.
Do we need to assume that a person is by default male unless we put a suffix on the ending?
Yeah.
Of the word.
Well, as I said, there are uses for gender, and one of the things we fought hard for was to eliminate the association of male with everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't think that's true in every case, but certainly in the statutes and in other legal areas, it was important to show that male was not the default.
In my profession, would you want to hear the phrase talk show hostess?
No, because I think that the association of the word hostess
with canapes,
which I think, first of all, let me say this, that one of the things that came about later on in terms of employment discrimination was the use of the word terms in order to differentiate male and female jobs. So that if you are a captain, for example, in a restaurant, you are paid more than a hostess, even though you might have the same function. I mean, captain stands at the front of the room and greets new eaters, diners, as a hostess does, but he was suddenly treated as more important and paid more.
Mm-hmm. Although in the military, a woman can be a captain.
Exactly. So I don't know what the answer is to that. All I know is that I'm an executrix of a will. I don't want to give that
Barbara,
up.
Thank you so much for calling. We have a couple of other things we want to clear up. A commentator on our website says that the phrase to get the sack comes from when the 17th century French workmen would pick up their bag or sack of tools and move on to a new job.
Oh.
And from our own staff here, our own newsroom, Amy Eddings, she got this from Wikipedia. Since 1630, cardinals have taken the style eminence. In accordance with Latin tradition, they signed by placing the title cardinalis, abbreviated card, period, after their personal name and before their surname, as, for instance, John Cardinal Doe. But they are usually spoken of in the normal as Cardinal John Doe.
Mm.
So
thanks, Amy.
So that clears that up.
Yeah.
When you're speaking about Cardinal Egan, you don't use his first name. What is it, Edward Cardinal Egan?
Yeah, I think so.
You would just say Cardinal Edward Egan. But if you were writing about him or talking about him in a more formal way, you would say Edward Cardinal Egan. Pat O'Connor will be back with us on May 20th. You can still reach her by email at grammarphobia.com. And also, next time you're here, we'll be talking about your new book, won't we?
Yes, thanks.
I really look forward to that. And thank you all for calling in. I'm sorry we couldn't get to more of your calls, but I thought that was pretty interesting stuff. And you're nodding your head.
Mm-hmm.
On tomorrow's show, Jim Lehrer, host of the PBS News show, The Lehrer Report, discusses his latest novel. And then we'll look at the ways that we may have to retrofit and rethink the suburbs for the 21st century. Then film critic Michel Simon on the films being featured in the new series of French movies at BAM, plus our latest underreported segments. The Leonard Lopate Show is produced by Blakeney Schick, Stephen Valentino, and Julia Corcoran. Melissa Egan is the executive producer, and we had help today from Drew Katchen and Alex Hotz. Debbie Fountain was at the audio controls. I'm Leonard Lopate, your host. Thanks for listening. We will see you tomorrow. ¶¶